Today, I'm talking with the very talented and very industrious and very technically minded Suzanne McConkie from the Ford Motor Company. Suzanne is a builder, she's a mom, she's a wife, and she is also making waves at Ford. And today we're going to talk to her about her home, her journey, her experience, but also we've just been touching on, you know, a little bit about being a mum and working and being having mum life and work life, and also still being having your own passions when you are a mum, and how do you actually progress yourself and progress your career once you come back. But not only did she build a house, she also built a passive house. So we really want to get into the details of how that came about. And I'm keen, you all know I'm a building scientist, so I'm mad into sustainability, but I'm really keen to know how that house is performing and how it's been performing over winter. Because when we think about sustainability, we think about a whole lot of things we have to do, and sometimes we forget to actually go back to the product and say, hey, how did it perform? So that's why I really wanted to talk to her initially, but then we got chatting and now we can't think of things that we can't talk about.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you.
So thanks for joining us on the podcast today. How are you going?
I'm great. Yeah, very warm, actually.
Surprising. Now, Suzanne built a passive house with a passive house contractor here in Melbourne. And I thought to kick off the podcast today, we've got so many things to talk about and they're all like kind of connected, but they're also all totally random. But let's kick off with talking about your building journey. And I think what would be really interesting for people to hear about is why you chose to go passive house, how you pulled that together. And I, of course, would love to know how it's performing.
When you posed the question to me a couple of weeks ago in writing, it made me really go on a journey of how we ended up here. And what also helped over the weekend was we cleared out our garage and I found a box from high school of my art projects. And in particular, year 11 and 12 VCE art projects. And they were all environmentally themed, right? Like I did a big fish with a mirror in it and you could see yourself in the mirror. And that was like the fish trapped inside the Great Barrier Reef. And I wouldn't ever say that I'm an environmental activist or that I don't sort of preach about the environment or, you know, and I have friends that are really passionate about sustainability and the environment and I never really even get involved in the conversations, right? Which is really interesting to me now because I think it's always been there, but it's not something that I felt like I could make a big impact on. But now that I'm living in this passive home and actually, I know we're going to touch on it, but in an innovation role at Ford Motor Company, you know, at a car company, and then with the recent bushfires, I've realized like I have a huge passion for it, but just probably have never really felt like I could make a big impact. And so when we stumbled across Carbon Light, we wanted to build a modular home. And then we found these guys that were like modular home and sustainable.
Mm.
My husband and I couldn't unsee it.
Yep.
And so that was the journey, you know, of us building this house. And now we are huge advocates of why is everybody not doing this? Yeah, it's been a fun, especially in the last couple of weeks, to like look back and be like, no, I've always cared.
Yeah, you know, that's such an interesting thing to touch on. Once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. You can't unsee it for what it is and how good it is. But why we're not all thinking like that? I think that that's also to do with like lack of information, but also I think that sometimes a lot of people are really passionate about sustainability and the environment, but it gets a bit technical and it gets a bit sciencey and it gets a bit scary and you don't want to be wrong. And then there's so much information out there and it's like you're either in the boat or you're not in the boat. And actually, like, probably the way I think about it is I've got a foot in both camps, right? And so I think that the movements and the fundamentalists who are pushing these movements, they want you to be in one camp or the other. And I think that's really scary for people.
You're so spot on. That's exactly, I think, how I've felt. So I haven't ever spoken about my passion for it. Like, I didn't feel like I knew enough to be able to, you know, be this vocally passionate person about the environment. And you're so right. Like, you're polarized. You feel like guilty. And now me and my husband are like reflecting on what we've built, and I'll tell you a bit more about our aquaponics setup that we built last weekend. We're just falling into these things that we're super passionate about but haven't felt like we were experts. And now all of a sudden we feel like we're the experts because we live in it and we can now preach about it, right? Like, we're super excited about where we've ended with, like, when it's not ended, it's like where we've started the journey with this. And yeah. And we're getting a pool that's going to be solar heated.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I suppose in some way now it's almost like it's a way of life. So yeah. One of the things that we find women struggle with when they first start thinking about their homes is they forget to think about their values. One of the biggest issues you want to think about up front is your values towards sustainability, because it impacts all your decisions down the road. And it's not something you can add in at the end if you suddenly realize about it.
Well, you're so spot on with the values comment, right? Because what was really important to us with this house is a big reason we bought this house was for that old shop front. Like, it was built in 1901. I think heritage is important to us and being respectful to that, but also wanting to have our dream home. So what we did was we've kept the shop front and we've sealed it off from the extension. So you wouldn't know it to be in our house. Like, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's a weird, like, it doesn't look weird. It's integrated. It's just it's a door between the old and the new, but it's the two buildings are separated by like 5 mil. Like, technically, like, it's not a lot, but yeah, it's a sealed home in itself, the new home, and it's connected to the old home.
Yep.
And that was like the value for us was, no, you can't touch that. That's untouchable. We know that that's not on the table. And we have a large gum tree that we built 5 years ago. You cannot touch that. Like, we knew exactly what the untouchables were. And the other one was our garage, right? We built our garage when we first moved into the property 6 years ago because that was something really important to us. We love building and making. So we needed that space. So we did that. And that's not a passive component either. So that's also, we said, that's untouchable. That needs to remain as it is, which seemed odd to a lot of people. They're like, why? Like, it's corrugated tin shed. And we're like, no, we chose the corrugated tin. We like it. And we're not going to touch it. And so we had those things mapped out from the start of the is, is not, right? Like, this is touchable. This is not touchable. This is on the table. This is not on the table. And then we just stuck to that.
That's a really interesting aspect to tackle a big problem. Often, actually, we hear that people who have a greenfield site and they have lots of land, they really struggle to come up with a concept because there are so many options. And I suppose in your example, you had some constraints which were the constraints, and then you've also got your orientation, and you want to maximise your orientation in the way that your house works on a block to maximise light and heat gain. So in terms of a design response to something that actually does make it a little bit simpler to approach the design response or the design solution, and I guess because you're also a product design manager?
Engineer.
Oh, engineer.
You are so close.
I suppose there's that little bit of your experience and your work experience also funneling into how you've approached your building project. And I think this is something for everyone to hear, is that no matter what field you're in, you'll find something in your background that will help you navigate your renovation, your project or your new build or whatever it is you're tackling. And it will be inherent and it will be intrinsic and you won't even know what's happening. You know, in terms of your floor plan and your flow and then working out the spaces to maximize that, how did you work through the problem with carbon light?
So actually we went to carbon light already with our plan. Like, so we already had the floor plan drawn up. And we did that with a friend who's a retired architect, Very lucky to have him willing to help us out for a bottle of wine.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, legend.
He missed my number.
Yeah, and he designed my husband's family home, his parents' home, a long time ago, and it's a beautiful house as well. It's in Beaumaris, and it's just a lovely design. And so when he said that he would help us out with he actually came up with two ideas about how to use the space, and it's not a big block, right? It's I think it's like 10 metres by 10 metres across, and the house is sort of half of that now. And then it's long. I actually don't know how long it is. How bad is that? It's probably like 16 metres long.
Yeah, I feel like it's maybe 20 metres. Feels roughly double the frontage.
Yeah, it's about that. So what we also were non-negotiables, right, was our yard space. So we're really lucky that the original house was built on one side of that block. If our house was built in the middle of the block, you would have two thin strips down each side, and that would not, you know, we wouldn't then have the lovely yard space that we do. So because it's built on one side and we're on a corner block, when we were searching for our house, we were like, it has to be a corner block. It took us a long time to find a shop front corner block, but they were our non-negotiables, right? We were like, has to have both of those. So yeah, so when we looked at the area, we said we didn't want to eat into our yard. And we also was reflecting on this morning with my husband. I grew up actually my parents have been building for 20 something years now, and my friends that are listening to this will chuckle because dad owned a built as well, and he's still, it's kind of a race to the finish, but he's 25 years in. But his house is huge. It's three stories, right? It's five bedrooms, it's four bathrooms. It's so big. And I guess this comes into the sustainability aspect as well, without us knowing about it. And like you said, drawing on your past without knowing it. Patrick and I wanted a space that was just the right size. Like, we didn't fill up the block because we could, or we didn't build something, the biggest thing we could afford with our money. We built what we wanted so that there's not, you know, extra cleaning that we have to do. There's not a single space in this house that we don't use every day that hasn't created any extra waste. And so we don't have to heat extra areas. We don't have to clean extra areas. We don't have to cool extra areas. It's just the right size. And even our rooms aren't big, right? We could have gone bigger, but we just made them the right size. And so that came into the original design. When our friend was helping us with that floor plan, we knew that we wanted this size.
Was he also looking at any orientation for you? How did you guys deal with some of the key spaces in terms of your orientation on your block?
We're west-facing with the majority of our windows, which is unfortunate, I guess. Like, it would be far better if they were north-facing. And he tried to maximise the windows that we do have north-facing, and then west-facing we've gone triple glazed.
So you've upped your glazing spec.
Yeah, we've got a huge, huge window wall of triple glazed. And that was a huge cost, but, you know, every week I would say we discuss how much that was worth it. Like, it was a third of the cost of our windows, and it was worth it.
I can't recall if you had any exterior shading or overhangs on that western facade.
We've got a huge gum tree that we planted 6 years ago because we knew we were going to do something. Yep. And so we were like, we need that there. That's going to provide shade. We've just planted a second one. Also, we bought like quite a mature tree so that it's big maybe in like a year from now. And we're playing around with what we need to do. So we've got a number of ideas that we've drawn up before we built, and we just said we'll just assess it as we go in terms of what we need to do. And I guess we're going to get into this, I know, because you're interested, but our hottest day this summer that we were here, because we actually go to the beach a lot during summer, so our hottest day that we were here was 36 degrees and it was 28 inside. So
great.
Yeah, it was comfortable, right? Like 28 sounds warm, but when you're coming inside from 36 outside, it feels all right. You can get through that.
Did you guys put in any aircon for those really, really hot days, or did you go full no aircon?
So we've put in provisions, so we could put a split system upstairs, but we went, let's just see how it feels. And we got through our first summer, last summer, no problem. We did have a couple of fans in the bedrooms for maybe like five nights over summer, like it. So it was fine, I would say. It was better than our old house. And so this summer, I think the jury's still out. We haven't decided. Yeah, but it would be like, because we put the pipes in, it would cost us a couple of grand to put it in.
Well, I suppose I like that theory in that you've sort of done a bit of future-proofing. So you've got it there if you really, really need it. But I really do like the let's wait and see, because you've obviously invested a lot of money into the passive house thermal system and the envelope of the house. And so you want to see how that's going to perform and also what you can tolerate, because I think the other thing that we think about, or we forget to think about, is that we want to be comfortable all the time. And the reality is, why? Why do we need that now? When it is a hot day and it's only one or two hot days, it's actually quite bearable. But it's that build up of 3 or 4 or 5 days of really, really high temperatures where, you know, there's no time for the building itself to cool down or for you to do any night purging or to get any cross ventilation through the house. So that's when it becomes a little bit challenging. But there is this idea of like we need to be at optimum comfort all the time. So I really admire that strategy that you guys have put in place. And I think it's something that a lot of people could adopt if they're thinking about you are 1 foot in each camp, because if we're strictly sustainable, we're thinking no aircon. And so I think that even if 90% of people took that step to minimize their amount of consumption or the amount of usage of aircon, we're all doing something more positive for the environment and for the climate. So how is it performing? So you've gone into it now, you've piqued my interest. How are you guys monitoring its performance? What are you doing? Are you tracking it yourselves? Do you have any software that's doing it for you?
So we're definitely not as into it as that, but we were tracking it with our baby monitor.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah, because it has a temperature reading on it, right? So the lowest it's got inside when we've just been living is 18 degrees.
Through winter.
Yeah, and it tries to maintain 21. And I think, over last winter especially, I enjoyed posting some pictures of the outside, which I know that you saw 2 degrees outside, 18 degrees inside, overnight low. So, yeah, it's definitely performing well. And our friends come over, and so I guess we're monitoring through verbatim, right? People come over and they're like, oh, it's so comfortable in here. So it doesn't feel like a warm house, as in like it's not heated. You go to my mum and dad's house and it's like toasty warm, right? And you stand in front of the fire and they've got their ducted heating on and it's toasty. Our house is probably the same temperature as theirs, but it doesn't feel toasty. It just feels really comfortable. Yep. And so you come in and you're like, whoa, so comfortable in here compared to outside. And often we go out with the boys I've got a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old now. We go outside and I'll be like, whoops, okay, jacket's on. Because we forget how cold it is, right? And when you look back on the last winter that we had in our 1900s house, I was pregnant, so I wasn't cold, but my husband put on a lion onesie every night over his clothes because he was freezing. And we've forgotten that so quickly because it's just comfy in here. And I'm actually in a T-shirt under my jacket today and I was sitting here in my T-shirt like all morning. So it's just you forget, right? Yeah.
No, because you're comfortable. Okay. Could you share with us a little bit, I guess, in terms of the bill performance? I guess thinking about that ROI and your big investment to build the house, how have you guys found, you've kind of been in there now 1 winter and borderline 1 summer. How have you found your bills have compared to previous?
We don't have gas. So electricity, it was a quarter of our old bills. And then now it's half, because we're working from home. So it's gone up because we're here all the time. But so now we're half of our old bills and we're here more than, you know, double the time with 4 of us in the house and we're still half our old electricity bills. Like that's just, you know, and it's actually just an added extra for us. We didn't actually talk about it that much in the build process, but it's just now we're like really proud and happy to tell people. We're like these advocates now of like, why isn't everyone doing this? And actually you said return on investment, like I don't feel like it cost us more when we did the calculations. And I guess because we weren't own a builder, we got Carbon Light to do the slab and the shell and then we fitted it out. And actually they did the windows as well. So they installed the windows and then plastering, plumbing, power, cladding, we subcontracted or did that all ourselves. And so if we had have paid somebody to build this house, we would have paid, I would say, double what we paid.
The economics of it is, if you are hiring someone to do something, there's going to be margin and overhead. There's going to be costs that they have to incur to be on your site, which you're going to pay them for. So there's so much more that you pay for that you can save as owner builders. But I guess the other part to that, the other side of that, is that you can also make a lot of mistakes as owner builder. So navigating your pathway is really important. And what I think that you guys did is kind of de-risked it for yourselves in some way. So you got the specialists to come in and do those really critical parts, which is the slab and the shell, which is their specialty. And that's what really contributes to the house working really well in terms of its passiveness, which is not even a word. I just made that up.
I love it. I'm going with it.
And then you guys have been able to go on in with your ability to see through the details and design. And I know that you have your sketchbook of design. And I remember when we came to site, you said, I'm not even going to show anyone because I don't want their opinion. I know what I want. That's what I'm building. And I loved it. And then you guys have got a bit of that technical background to be able to work through some of the challenges and have some, I guess, that foresight to understand what you're building because of that, your background as well.
Yeah, and that was actually Carbon Light's coaching when we spoke to Burkhard, the owner of Carbon Light, was their expertise is doing the shell, right? And they were so happy for us to partner with them and do the fitting out, because his expertise is building an awesome sealed passive home. He doesn't really want to plaster it for you. and so it was just, you know, it worked for all of us. It was like the most efficient way to get the best product was partnering like that. And then it was a constant discussion between my husband and myself on the best way to efficiently then fit it out. Like, you know, we still had to live while we were building it. So he wanted to plaster, for example, and him plastering our house would have taken a few weeks. It took a couple of days to pay an expert to come in and do it really lovely. Like, you know, so just that constant discussion about, you know, bang for your buck and your time is money. And I guess that's something we haven't said. The passive build was 4 days. They built our house in 4 days. There's huge money saves in the efficiency of getting that done in 4 days. And it was 7 weeks from the day they started to the day we moved in.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that was the best. Like, doing it that fast was so awesome. And then it's been a year since we moved in, and we've just, you see on Instagram, we're still finishing it off, but it's been comfortable since the day we moved in.
The love projects, I guess, as well. I know you guys are lovingly tiling the bathroom and finishing off that last, you know, 5 or even 10% can be really challenging. And it does take time because it takes mental energy as well. And you have a young family, you guys have 2 boys, so be a little kind to yourself. I know I'm still working on my lifetime project. You know, the other thing I wanted to ask, I guess, people often forget about the shell, which I think we've spoken to a lot about. I'm keen to kind of also know the other systems that you have in place in terms of being sustainably minded. So you mentioned that you're fully electric and there's no gas to the site, which is great. What are you doing? You've got solar panels, you've got solar hot water. Run me through the systems, I guess.
So we've got solar hot water, and we have, again, we've put in the provisions for the solar electricity. So our electrician put in the wiring so that we can add it. And that was just in terms of the budget. So we recently got our certificate, our final inspection certificate, which now enables us to get the house revalued, refinanced, and we can get the extra money now for probably 10 grand worth of solar panels. So we've had to, like you said before, future proof for the added bits. The pool is also in the next stage, and we're going to solar heat that. And we just built ourselves a vertical aquaponics garden last weekend. So it's got an IBC, which is like a chemical drum that we got for $50 off eBay. And so that's a meter by meter by meter at the bottom, and it now has 30 perch fish in it. So then it's got a pump in there, and it takes the water up to the top of the vertical garden, and it drip feeds the water down through the plants, and the plants are just held in with like a weeding mat we've used, but felt is the usual, and the plants are edible. So we can now reach outside our window and pick some lettuce, and then the waste from the fish feeds the plants, and then eventually we'll be able to fish out our window. for dinner.
You're not going to eat the little fishy
bone. We're going to eat the perch. Yeah, it's all about sustainability now. We're like on board.
But what if you name them and they become part of the family?
Well, that is one of my son is a little concerned, and we said we're not naming them.
Well, that's actually really cool. I built a green wall in 2011. Certainly didn't have its own fish tank or its own supply of fish filtering the water, so to speak. But it was self-feeding and self-irrigating, and it did have a similar setup where sort of the plants were bedded into sort of like a felt man-made material. And one of the challenges actually with that one was its ability to self-feed and self-water was that we had this kind of problem with the house, it wasn't a house actually, it was a commercial property, but we had a problem with the property in terms of what we did with that water. So we had to catch that water. We had to make sure it was drained adequately away from the site. And I kind of love this fish idea because I think that kind of feeds into all the challenges technically that come with it, as well as being sustainable and being life cycle.
Yeah, it's super fun. And like, it's just, you know, something we've stumbled across now that we're, you know, following these sustainable Instagram accounts and whatever. Like, we're just, you know, you're learning more because you're looking for it now, and we're fallen into it and now becoming advocates, which is weird.
It's fantastic. I love it. I just love that you've totally changed your way of life, and it's so embodied. And I think, you know, when you were talking to the story about your dad's house and the size of it and how you guys really assessed what you wanted and what you need, I see that as a huge cultural shift, particularly with our generation. I grew up in a notoriously overheated, very overheated home and a very big house, you know, which at the time we had hydronic heating in the 90s, which was a huge expense my parents put into it now that I think about it. But because they came from a hot climate, we were living in New Zealand, they always wanted to be warm. And so it's our values drove those decisions to spend that money. And I myself had the same sort of value proposition as you, where we just want enough space. We don't want too much space. We want enough space. We're okay to be a little bit squeezed in at times. And I don't have time for copious amount of cleaning. And we want what we need and not more than that. If anyone is listening to this podcast and you're thinking about how big should your home be, really sit down and think about that. Now, we've spoken about how much life has changed for you. And I'd love you to sort of tell the story, because I think that one of the things we do know about the women that listen to our podcast and our In Builder Collective is we have a lot of young mums and we have a lot of experienced mums. We span the full spectrum of women. But some really exciting things came out of your life changes around that time. And I suppose I'd love to hear that story from you and what it did for you.
Yeah, so I went from a young mum to an experienced mum in the last 4 years. So I had two children in 3 years, and I was in a management role at Ford. So I've been there now 17 years, so straight out of uni, and I'll never go anywhere else, blue blood. My grandfather worked there, my dad's worked there, my brother's worked there. I met my husband there, and his brother works there, and a couple of our cousins work there. So, yeah, we're Ford for life. But I became a manager in, I think it was 2012, and then had my first son in 2016. You can have all the best laid plans of how you think you're going to be as a mum, but you don't know until you get there. And so home life for me with my first son, I would say that by the end of 10 months, I was a bit bored. And so I went back to work at 10 months, and I went back initially 3 days a week into a management role, and then I actually went up to 4 days working from home one day because I realized I was doing it anyway. So why not tell them that I was doing it and get paid for that? And they didn't challenge that at all. And so then I went back to work for 10 months. And then I had another baby. And I guess we had struggles to get pregnant with the first one. So, you know, quickly let's try and have another one and see how long it takes. And lucky for us, it didn't take long. But that meant, another. So I had, you know, effectively 10 months at work in 3 years. And so with the second lot of maternity leave, I stayed in touch with work. And I continued to lead the Professional Women's Network at Ford while I was on maternity leave. And so that was, I actually really enjoyed, you know, the monthly touch points of connecting with a group of women at work during that time. And I probably went too far with the planning to do something in the second lot of maternity leave in that we built the house. And it kind of just worked out that way, right? Because we weren't in a rush to build the house. We started drawing plans for our house like 5 years ago. And it was actually really nice that we were never in a rush because it just happened as it happened. We ended up 6 months delay for VCAT and it was okay because we didn't never put a deadline on it. But it happened to coincide with my maternity leave. So we had Gabriel in July and then we built the 4 day build was in the following March. So he was on site with me on my hip in the pram. He's an angel and looking back at the photos, I'm like, how was he? Like I forget that he was there, right? Like he was just with me every day as I, you know, manage these trades. He was here while I was bricking the wall. He was in a cardboard box next to me, like as a playpen while I was laying bricks. And it was super fun. It was super challenging, but I loved it. I'd do it again, but not anytime soon. And there will be no more children. But I guess keeping in touch with work and also, you know, sharing the journey I was on with that meant that when I returned to work in June, so 11 months of maternity leave, when I returned to work, they offered me a promotion. And so now my new role is engineering strategy manager. I've been in that role for a year. Well, it's an amazing role that they kind of built a bit for me. So innovation, learning and development, process improvements, culture change, and I'm job sharing with another amazing lady. And we're both working part-time. So we both work 4 days a week and we juggle the job between us. It's been a hell of a year, but a great journey to be on. I guess the innovation part of the role maybe lends itself to hearing about sustainability.
I just find your journey so inspiring, and it just brings so many things to mind that I want to say. And I guess probably the most impactful thing that I think we can talk about is that, you know, this change in women who want to go back to work after they've had kids, and I guess a bit of a stereotype, and I kind of want to call it out a bit, I guess, that, you know, sometimes companies do forget, or they think that women who are coming back from work, from maternity leave, their priorities are different and that they don't really want to be at work. They're just there for a paycheck and that they're really their true thoughts are really with their child. And yeah, to a certain point, that's true. We fundamentally change once we become a parent, once we become a mum. But that doesn't mean that we still aren't putting our 100% in when we're at work. And you yourself mentioned it there about some of the guys in your office and at Ford that have actually noticed and have a new opinion. And I think I'd love you to share that, because I also think generationally we're changing in that mindset. And I think men are actually on that journey with us. And that's what I find really great.
There's a few things that come to mind, and it's become a passion of mine as well, I guess, as a mum and trying to work it out and navigate it all. And it's different for everyone, right? That's what's great. Like everyone is different and we can all achieve whatever it is that is right for us. And so just being okay with whatever your priorities are is fine, right? So my priorities, you know, I love my kids to bits and I love my family, but I also love work, and that's okay. But I also have friends that aren't super keen to get back into the workforce straight away either, and that's fine too. Like it's all whatever is right for us is right. And so going back to work, and I haven't shared this with you, but what's great for me and our family is that Pat and I, my husband, we're truly equal, right? We both work 4 days. And Pat said to me a while ago, I was like, oh, I just can't handle doing the food shopping or the online grocery shopping at the moment. And he's like, that's okay. Like, I've got it. And I was like, oh, I just feel guilty about, you know, bits and pieces at the moment. And he was like, why do you feel guilty? You've looked after me for, you know, 8 years. He's like, you know, why is it that you feel guilty about me now doing my bit? And us being like truly equal. And I was like, oh, like I've never really thought about it like that. And it's so right. And so, we are truly equal in how we divide and conquer now. And the budget used to be my thing, like tracking our spending and doing all of that. Loved it, right? Love a spreadsheet. Loved doing that. Loved playing that role. But then like a year ago, I was full to the brim and I just couldn't do it. And now it's his thing. We're applying for a new mortgage at the moment and that's in his court. And I'm good with that. Like we just divide and conquer and wherever it lands, that's fine. But like we're just truly equal. So I think there is a mindset shift, right? Because I feel like that's a new way of thinking for a man especially. But well, actually for me too, like us both thinking differently to probably how our parents or our grandparents would have thought. And that's pretty cool. But the male champions of change, I think I'm probably looking for it more. I'm looking to hear it more and I hear it that men are saying like these mums that are coming back into the workforce are the super powered employees that you want because we are super efficient. We have to go home. We're really strict about, the work-life balance. I never work overtime. I've never worked overtime, like a spot here and there, but I'll smash my workout during my workday. You just know how to juggle and you know how to get it done so that you can have your life as well. So I think they're the employees you want.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a huge advocate of what you just said. I think for us as well, we are really fair in how we balance and divvy out the jobs at home. And we were really lucky, I suppose, for us, like I had 12-ish, 16-ish weeks at home with the baby initially. And then Kian got to take 17 weeks off from work and he got to have his time at home with the baby and I got to go back to work. And then we got to balance that where I got, 3 days back and he had 2 days at work. And so we were both then had days at home as sole parent. And then we had days in the office where we got to, get those things fulfilled. And I think for us, probably that was the most important balance. And that's something that I didn't initially think he'd be open to, but it turned out that he wanted to have that time too, and he was able to take that time at his job. And one of the things that struck me when that happened for us was I came along to the Ford International Women's Day. Was it last year or the year before?
Last March.
God, it was only last March. I spoke at that panel, and that was one of the things that came up. In the panel discussion is that men also want to have paternity leave and have those options to be able to be at home with their kids. And so I love that you guys are embodying that in work. You're also doing it at home. I think it's a core value. And I kind of love that Ford, this really, what I would think of as a really macho, male-dominated, and sorry, hopefully no one from Ford rings me here, but, grey-haired, bored with really old-fashioned ideas, actually is a very progressive and very open-minded organisation that is embodying and not only just talking the talk about being more flexible and supporting women, but the fact that you've just told me in your own experience, you're working in a job share. A lot of people, big companies don't like job share. It's hard to manage. You're working part-time. You've been able to work part-time. You've had contact days and still had responsibility while you're on maternity leave. That's murky. How do you work that out? That's too hard. Plus, you've been given more responsibility after coming back from maternity leave, and that old-fashioned idea of having to rework back up the ladder has just been smashed down.
I can hear my colleagues saying, oh, come on. So I will say we've still got a way to go, right?
Yeah.
But the change is coming. Last year when they offered me the promotion and they put forward the job share suggestion, I was like, wow, no, I don't have to wait 10 years. This is a journey and it's, we're on it. And now actually we're looking at the flexible work. We're working from home. They sent us home. Ford was one of the first to send 2,500, but we've still got some in the office or some people that work on cars and people that work in our warehouses that I've had to stay in. But majority of our workforce in Australia has been at home now for 20 weeks. And we've been delivering. And so we're now looking at, well, what does that mean for flexible work going forward? And it is a progressive mindset. Yeah, I think that the world's changing and Ford's changing with it.
Yeah, I mean, like even as a small business, we're asking ourselves the same questions. So I think that's important. And also I think it's important, when you are on these big journeys and you are about making big changes, you should really acknowledge where you are in the journey and actually be proud of what you've achieved to date. So say it loud and say it proud. So cheesy, yeah. But it's the truth. If you don't acknowledge, you don't actually identify that it's happened.
Yeah, spot on.
I thought that was a really important thing to talk about, because I think there's lots of women in your position, lots of women in jobs that are straddling both things, that are thinking about their futures. And I just think that you have such an inspiring story to talk to, and I wanted to get that out there and share it.
But I've also been, so I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. I have shared glimpses of it, and I'm not afraid of sharing it. But yeah, because our son was sick, right? Gabriel was sick. He had meningitis at 3 weeks old. And so we're in the Royal Children's of like, maybe he wasn't going to survive. For like a week. Yeah. And that was August in his first year. And then we built the house the following March. And so in the middle of that, it was so hard building the house, having like a 6-month-old baby who we nearly lost. Felt like I got diagnosed with it, which helped, because I was like, I'm not just crazy. Like, this is, you know, depression and anxiety that I'm handling. Yeah. And so it's been such a tough 2 years. Like, he's 2 years old now, but like, amazing support network, right? Go back to work, to a promotion, build a house, do all of this while I'm struggling with, and still struggling with anxiety and still on medication for it. But what an awesome life and achievements so far. But yeah, there's hard bits too, right? Like, it's not all awesome. Okay. I feel like I do a disservice to others with mental health when I say that it's all great. Because, and that's that Instagram, Facebook, social media, you know, this is the life that you want people to think you're living. I have put posts about me being in Bunnings in tears in the car park at times, and like, the journey was hard. There was a hard, super hard days where I just wanted to cry, and I got up and came to the building site, and you know, it wasn't all bells and whistles.
And the thing is that it's not, everyone's journey is unique. I think even in acknowledging the bad days with the good days helps you go, it's worth it, because I've had the bad day, the good day is good. Do you know, the bad day makes the good day better in some ways? And everyone is struggling with their own mental well-being in their own ways.
And especially now, right, with COVID. And I think Carrie Bickmore summed it up on the project the other night really well, in that she said, we feel guilty for grieving about our struggles at the moment because there's so many people that are worse off, but that doesn't make what you're feeling not real. Like, you're feeling it, right? And we're all struggling, and it's okay to acknowledge that you're struggling.
Yeah, it's that overwhelming feeling of like, I was saying this to someone else, like, you've done your homework and now you have to do it again, and it's the weight of that.
The weight.
You know.
That's the exact right word at the moment. It's the weight, and everyone's up to, they're nearly full to the brim, and the weight is just, we're not used to it.
It's good that you got diagnosed and got the help that you deserve, you know, because people also feel like, oh, their problems are not big enough.
Yeah, and I'm so lucky to have my husband, like, and to live with my best friend. Like, he's just, I know it sounds soppy, but I am so grateful that I met him, and he's just, I'm so lucky, so lucky. Legend of a man. It's a fun, challenging life, and Jenny's real.
Thanks, Suze.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.